You're listening to New England Public Media News. I'm Adam Frenier, and this is the shortlist NEPM's Week in Review. Joining us today on the line, Elizabeth Roman, reporter and editor with the Springfield Republican and El Pueblo Latino, and Larry Parnas, investigations editor with the Berkshire Eagle. Larry, Liz, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Adam.
This week, Springfield Police Commissioner Cheryl Clapper revealed her department has not changed its use of force policy despite suggestions from the city council. Clapper told councilors it didn't make sense to make the changes now while the state legislature is trying to come up with a wide-ranging police accountability bill. Council President Justin Hurst disagrees.
I think we're making a critical mistake not getting this stuff in writing now.
This comes on the heels of a scathing federal report highlighting excessive and unreported use of force by Springfield officers. Liz, given the pressure from the council, protests over police brutality, and now this report, what do you make of Clapper's decision to leave it up to state lawmakers, which could take weeks or even months?
I think that it's a lot of people feel it's very disappointing. I think Justin Hurst is saying what the community feels, that why not take a proactive approach? Why are you waiting for the state to demand of you to do this? Why aren't you just doing it to show goodwill to, you know, the constituents that live in the city? The chokehold thing, okay, on and off, you can decide what you want to do there. But the idea that you wouldn't demand that they try to de-escalate before using excessive force, just, it doesn't make sense to me. Why wouldn't you want to train all of your officers to pursue that path before getting into an altercation with someone?
Larry, Councilor Orlando Ramos, who chairs the Public Safety Committee, told me he's considering an ordinance to force the changes the council wants. He said he didn't do that at first because he thought he had Clapper's word that she'd go along with the proposal from the city council. Is this a good idea?
Well, I'm just sort of flummoxed at Clapper's position on this. Police commissioner oversees police, but that's a job that is a position of public trust, and it's incumbent on someone in that job to act in the public behalf. And, you know, if this was a minor issue about some kind of pension reform, or it was not such a burning public concern right now, I could see waiting so that you don't do needless changes. But the message to the public that she's communicating, probably not intentionally, is that it's more important to make life easier for the police and to protect them. And even her recent comments about the use of body cameras, she said in the course of outlining that this is a way to protect officers from false claims. And yes, true, but I think she's wholly missing the boat on the point of where the public concern is and how it could be public could be reassured.
Also this week, amid concerns over COVID-19, some area colleges and public school districts have decided to use remote learning this fall. UMass Amherst actually reversed course and is now only allowing some students who must take classes in person because of their major or other circumstances to be on campus. Mount Holyoke and Smith Colleges are doing something similar, and the Springfield Public Schools are going with remote learning for at least the first quarter of the school year. Liz, you wrote about precautions schools could take to reopen for in-person learning, and given what you heard, are you surprised by these developments late this week?
I'm not, and particularly with Springfield, I think Superintendent Warwick has been leading up to this for the past couple of weeks, just sort of hinting at it, because there's just no way to follow the CDC rules of 6 feet in classrooms that have so many children, and they don't have excessive space. So in a place where maybe you could put kids in a building that was unused and spread out children that way, it makes sense. But on a college campus or in a classroom where there's no room for you to spread out desks that way, it just becomes really unsafe for children to be there, not to mention trying to figure out how you're going to screen children as they come in, and faculty as well, and their concerns about teaching in the classroom.
And staying with COVID-19 and what you two have been writing about, Larry, you've been tracking the virus in Berkshire County. What have you been seeing in the data?
I've been tracking the numbers, Adam. I'm trying to stay away from the virus. What we've seen, the curve was pretty effectively flattened through July, as it had in much of Massachusetts, but the numbers are coming back up. They're coming back up slightly, but these are the things that college officials, Kumbhul Subbaswamy at UMass, and the Smith president are pointing to as reasons to change what they're doing. One of the recent concerns out of Smith is you bring all these young people back, many of whom are asymptomatic. These colleges are hearing from their communities that they are part of the place that they do business in. Northampton for Smith. Just today, the Williamstown Health Board met virtually with Williams College officials to say, hey, guys, we want in on these discussions. And I think the town of Amherst was pushing back about UMass and the numbers that they were planning to bring to Amherst. So I think these institutions are realizing that they do operate within these geographic entities, and they have to match what the local concerns are with their own financial concerns.
Also this week, a tropical storm caused hundreds of thousands of people in Massachusetts and Connecticut to lose power, and there's still widespread outages in Connecticut that might not be resolved until next week. State officials have been upset about the response by Eversource. Some state officials, the state's major power company, saying that they maybe weren't ready to deal with this storm. Liz, while some people in Western Mass have been slow to get their power back, the problem's far greater in Connecticut. Is there anything state and local officials can do, or maybe should do, to make sure power companies are ready to go next time we have another storm like this?
I mean, I think we were reminiscing, my friends and I, on the 2011 storm that came right after the tornado. And, you know, they do what they can. I don't think that they're going out of their way to slowly repair things. You have to look at the safety of where the wires are that are falling on trees. And again, maybe I'm biased because I feel that Springfield and Eversource has worked really well with us in the past. So I don't know. I'm not sure what they could do to really push the company to move faster. They have to work safely.
And Larry, Berkshire County wasn't excluded from losing power either, particularly in the southern part.
No, indeed. Connecticut got it far worse. Than the outage numbers here are less than in Connecticut, where it's eastern Connecticut, parts of it are virtually entirely without power. I think it's important to remember that these storms do horrific damage. An Eversource official compared this to Sandy. You know, these utilities are kind of one of our favorite punching bags. They do spend a lot of ratepayer money to prepare to deal quickly with storms. And I think the calls for investigations are wise, because we need to make sure that the money that they spent from ratepayers to prepare to be able to recover quickly, that money is properly spent.
Larry Parnas with the Berkshire Eagle and Elizabeth Roman with the Springfield Republican and El Pueblo Latino, thanks for being with us today.
Oh, you bet. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And thank you for listening to the Shortlist NEPM's Week in Review. Remember, you can catch us at any time, wherever you get your podcasts, or at nepm.org/podcast hub. I'm Adam Frenier, and this is New England Public Media.